It is DRAFT time. Well, close. 1 week away from the draft. Round one, anyway. Will be next Thursday night in Montreal. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the draft. We'll go to the Wester hotline. We're joined by the new editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, Ryan Kennedy. We knew you when. Congratulations on the promotion and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here again.
Your final draft rankings are out, and I want to start at the top because it seems these last, well, the last week or so, there's more talk about, okay, maybe the top spot isn't locked in. Maybe there's more competition. What are you hearing, and what did you think, in your opinion, when it came to your final draft rankings of that top guy?
Well, for me, it's still Shane Wright, and I acknowledge it's a close field, and there are certainly some good options. I think with the Montreal Canadiens having that first selection, this is an organization that desperately needs a top six center, and for me, Shane Wright is the obvious choice. He's a perfect fit there. He's a two-way guy. He's very smart. You know, he skates well. He competes hard, and I think that, you know, that skill set makes him pretty much NHL ready already, even though he did miss a year of development time due to the OHL season being canceled 2 years ago due to the pandemic. Juraj Slafkovský, fantastic prospect, but he is a winger. And, Logan Cooley, another good center as well, but I think he needs a bit more time. So for me, yeah, plenty of great options, but this time of year is always the most anxious for everyone because it's very hard to get the straight story from anyone in terms of NHL teams because they all have their own agendas, obviously, in terms of what they want to reveal and what they don't want to reveal.
How deep, so you just brought up three names, how deep is the top tier in that beginning of round one, in your opinion?
Well, it's interesting because I think it's expanded a little bit recently, and I say that because Cutter Gauthier, who played for the U.S. National Team Development Program, you know, for most of the year we considered him to be a left winger, even though he did play some center when Logan Cooley went to Team USA's World Junior Camp. As we got to the end of the season, as we got to the draft combine, which obviously was in Buffalo, you know, Gauthier talking to teams, they saw him as a center, and he's going to Boston College next year. The Eagles see him as a center. So all of a sudden, you have a 6'2" player who can really shoot the puck, who can kill penalties, and now he's a center. So that's a lot more valuable than him being a winger. So when I look at the top tier now, I would include Gauthier. So I feel like you're looking at, you know, maybe that top tier is 6 or 7, depending on how you feel about Joachim Kamel, another very nice winger from Finland. It's very interesting because you have those top two defensemen, Simone Nemec and David Juracek as well, that are very intriguing. So I think that top tier for me, is it 3? Is it 6? It's really hard to sort of grade it out at this point because I think it's pretty close.
All right. No matter what, the Sabres are outside of that top tier by the time they have their first pick. It's at 9. They're at 16. They're at 28. Is this a good year for a team to have 3 first-round picks like the Sabres?
Well, it's always good to have 3 first-round picks, right? But what it does is it gives the Sabres a lot of flexibility. And I think that's the most important thing with stockpiling assets like that. And, you know, having said that, I think there's some pretty interesting players along the way. And, you know, it comes down to how much risk are you willing to take. You know, that number 16 pick is very intriguing because, you know, obviously the Sabres already have some pretty fantastic young defensemen in Owen Power and Rasmus Dahlin's not that old himself. Mm-hmm. But do you go for somebody like Leon Bischel, the big Swiss defenseman who is mobile and hits like a truck? Do you go with Owen Pickering, another defenseman who has a lot of size, is very raw, but is a great puck mover and transition guy? Do you go with somebody like Jimmy Snuggerud, also from the National Team Development Program? He's a winger with size and a ton of raw potential. the fact that you have such options really helps. And then, you know, you go to that late round pick. And again, you know, we talk a lot about guys in the 25 to 40 range where, you know, maybe they're a first rounder, maybe they fall just outside the first round, but it's all pretty much the same grouping. So again, you know, because you have such a high pick in the top 10, do you take a little more risk? Is it somebody like Julian Lutz, who played Germany this year, missed a lot of the season with injury, but scouts loved him when he played? Or do you go with, is Ivan Marashnichenko still on the board? You know, a player who played in Russia, so there is some risk there. He also had Hodgkin's lymphoma, which he is recovering from. So, you know, obviously a big wild card there, but you have a kid that can hit and can really shoot. So it's a very fun time, at least for me, because, you know, my job's not on the line if I make the wrong pick for the Sabres. But I would also think that it's a very exciting time for the Sabres scouting staff and for Kevin Adams, where there's so much possibility. And, of course, you can always trade up and down if you feel like you need to do that as well.
We're with Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News. I know Kevin Adams was asked about this. Our Sabres beat reporter did a one-on-one with him, and I'll bring this up with you as well. What happens with Russian prospects in this draft? And are there first-round guys, Russian prospects, that, you know, maybe don't come off the board? Or what do you think does happen?
Well, that's the million-dollar question this year. And, you know, talking to GM at the Combine, there was this sense of, you know, when they're talking to their peers, they'll say, okay, well, you take a Russian first, and then we'll take one.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be, I think, there's going to be some gamesmanship and a bit of a game of chicken there, because, you know, Marashnichenko, you know, before everything happened with the invasion and, you know, Russian hockey kind of becoming a pariah state internationally, you know, this is a kid that we were talking about as a top 10 pick at one point. Maybe, you know, last year we were talking about maybe being even top three. And, you know, his early results weren't as good. He kind of bounced between the different Russian pro leagues. But, you know, the talent is there. And then you have Danila Yurov, who, again, you know, we were originally looking at as maybe a top 10 pick. You know, a lot of people had him sort of in the 7-9 range. So there's definitely a lot of homework that needs to be done. There's a lot of risk aversion that needs to be looked into, because, you know, these are players that played over in Russia, and, you know, their contract status will have to be delved into very deeply to say, okay, well, when can this kid come over? And can we make sure that this kid will come over? You know, do we have to wait a number of years, and are we willing to do that? What happens if, you know, the situation in Ukraine gets even more dire? How does that reflect on Russia and the availability of players from there? So it's a huge X factor, and I think that's going to be one of the main storylines on day one of the draft, is how many Russians who play over in Russia do we see go in the first round? Because you do have Pavel Minchikov, the defenseman who played in the Ontario Hockey League for Saginaw this year. I don't think he'll be affected. And I am hearing that Marashnichenko plans on going to the draft. So what does that mean in terms of how teams view him? Utterly fascinating.
Final thing, and it's not just related to the draft, but this is the first time GMs will be together in person for a draft in 3 years. Do you think that could lead to more trades, more activity, a little bit more entertaining things going on, changes being made because they're not on, you know, Zoom sitting at their home bases?
Oh, certainly. And, you know, for a while there, the draft was basically trade deadline number two on the calendar, because you had everybody in the same place. They could just kind of wander over to each other's tables. And we did not have that in the Zoom era, if you will. So I think that, you know, especially with where the salary cap is right now and, you know, some of the big names that are out there that might be potential free agents and might be re-signing, teams have a lot of decisions to make. And I think that, you know, the draft is sort of perfectly placed on the schedule where teams can make a lot of moves. And again, when you have all of your peers there, it makes it so much easier. It's frictionless, really, to just pull a guy to the side and be like, okay, here's what we're looking for. What can we do? And then you have the picks right there. So when you're trading players for prospects, you can kind of get that instant validation of the pick where, you know, your fan base can say, okay, well, we lost so-and-so, but at least we got another first rounder or whatever happens to be.
All right, Ryan, how can folks get the draft preview from the Hockey News?
Well, you can go to thehockeynews.com or you can go to your favorite newsstands and pick it up now. Shane Wright is on the cover. I always love draft preview. It's not only fun to write, but I love reading it as well. I encourage everyone to check it out. It's one of our most fun issues for me.
Well, enjoy the draft. Again, congratulations on the promotion, and thanks for coming on with us this morning.